Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the FirstGroup pre-closure trading update call. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation, followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you this conference is being recorded today, Friday the 2nd of October 2015, and I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Chris Church. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Gaz. Good morning, and thank you for joining the FirstGroup pre-close trading update for the 6 months ended 30th of September 2015. I'm joined today by Rachel Borthwick, Nick Chavez, and Faisal Tabar. As usual, I will start by describing recent trading and other key events, and then I will be happy to take any questions that you may have. In summary, overall trading for the group was in line with our expectations during the half. Our multi-year transformation plans continue to progress despite a more challenging trading environment in some of our markets. Many of the key market trends that we saw in the first quarter and have been flagged by others in their recent updates have continued through the second quarter. In student, we have now completed a second solid bid season, and we continue to make progress with our cost efficiency plans. As anticipated, revenues for Greyhound and Transit have been affected by the substantially lower oil prices. Despite this, the transformation of Greyhound's business model is on track. In bus, we continue to grow revenues despite the continued volatility in concessionary revenues seen across the whole sector. We also continue to make good progress in this division as well on the cost efficiency side. Finally, our rail business has had a very good first half on the back of continued strong passenger growth. For the full year, we continue to expect the progress of our non-rail businesses to largely offset the reduced size of our UK rail franchise portfolio. As you know, our financial results are normally second half weighted, particularly in First Student, and I will return to this in more detail later. On cash, we expect underlying net cash flow to be broadly flat this year, no change from the previous guidance. Sustainable cash generation for the group will increase in the medium term as our transformation plans progress. I will now turn to each division in a little more detail. In student, you will remember that our intention was to build on the success we had with our new pricing strategy introduced in 2014. And in this year's bid season, that has been achieved. Average pricing on the approximately one-third of our contracts up for bid this season increased by 5.3%. Just to remind you, last year's increase was 4.5%. At over 85%, our contract retention rate was slightly ahead of our expectations. On the cost side, as is the case for the industry as a whole, we continue to experience driver shortages in some areas. Our focus remains on cost efficiencies with, as you know, a target to deliver another $50 million over the original $100 million delivered by 13-14. In 14-15, i.e. last year, we delivered $19 million, and we are on target to get to the $50 million target in 16-17 as planned. This is being achieved by applying uniform best practice procedures to each of our 500-plus locations. I remind you that most of students' activity is weighted to the second half of our financial year because of the timing of the school year reduces the number of operating days in the first half. I also remind you that for the full year, profit is impacted by approximately $17 million due to the lower number of operating days in our 15-16 financial year. This is due to the timing of the Easter and Labor Day holidays, and that's the main reason why first half revenue is expected to be approximately 3% lower in the half. Or in other words, profit will increase by $17 million next year, purely due to the operating days impact. If we put all of this together, for the full year, we expect revenues to be down slightly year-on-year, but margins to be in excess of 8%. And we remain on track to achieving the 10% margin target in 16-17. Turning now to transit, which has had a solid first half with continued contract wins and retentions in all segments. But as we have previously flagged, lower oil prices have significantly affected the demand for our shuttle services in the Canadian oil sands region. Most new construction projects there have now halted, and many of our customers are paring back other activity in the region. This effect means that first half revenues for transit are expected to be approximately 5% lower. This does not affect our longer-term view of transit's prospects, which are for a continued growth in its broad portfolio of business, supported by our experienced and strong management team. We continue to view transit's margins of around 7% as attractive in the context of the limited capital investment required in this business. As expected, Greyhound and our intercity coach competitors continue to experience significant demand challenges as a result of the substantially lower gasoline prices. This makes alternatives such as the car more affordable. For the half, Greyhound's like-for-like revenue is down 6.2%, with longer haul journeys particularly heavily affected. Greyhound Express was more resilient, with revenues decreasing by slightly over 3%. In Greyhound, we continue to actively manage costs, including mileage, frequencies, and overhead reductions, to help mitigate the impact of the oil effect on our profitability. I remind you that even at these depressed levels, Greyhound generates good cash for the group. We remain on track to launch our yield management and real-time pricing systems in the autumn as planned. This will give Greyhound better tools to both stimulate sales and manage margins going forwards. Our medium-term target in this division of 12% margins is unchanged, although, as I have been saying for some time, the actual timing of the achievement of this will depend to an extent on the trajectory of the oil price and the wider US economy. Turning now to UK Bus, where our transformation of the business continues to deliver solid commercial passenger revenue growth of more than 2%. In common with many of our peers, we have seen lower concessionary volumes and revenues. Overall, like-for-like revenue growth for the half will be approximately 1.3%. The concessionary revenue trends we and others in the industry have seen highlight the importance of the levers we are pulling on the cost side of the UK bus transformation. We have continued to execute on these initiatives, and key areas are improved driver productivity, greater fuel efficiency, and reductions in maintenance expenditure. We have also taken a number of actions to optimize our depot portfolio. In the first half, we announced the sale of the depot in South Devon, the closure of Bracknell and Hereford, and a merger in the Potteries. As a reminder, the majority of the approximately £7 million of one-time costs associated with these actions will impact our first half. We are taking these costs above the line. For the full year, we expect underlying trading margins, i.e. before these one-off costs, to improve by about 1 percentage point. Finally, and turning to our ongoing UK rail portfolio, this business continues to see strong passenger volume growth, driving like-for-like revenue growth of approximately 7% in the half, and good financial performance towards the top end of our expectations. On franchising, in December, we expect to hear the outcome of the TransPennine Express competition. The new franchise will start in April 2016. We were also recently shortlisted for the East Anglia franchise and look forward to submitting our bid to the DfT in December. That contract award is expected in June next year, ahead of a contract start date of October 2016. Further out, there are, of course, a lot of franchise competitions to come, and I reiterate that we will continue to bid on these in a disciplined manner at acceptable levels of risk and reward. Finally, a few words on cash. As I mentioned earlier, we expect underlying net cash flow for the current year to be broadly flat. And as we have indicated at the last full-year results announcement, our transformation plan should begin delivering significantly improved free cash flow from next year. You will have also seen that both our rating agencies, Fitch and S&P, now have us rated at BBB- stable. So in summary, overall trading for the group during the first half has been in line with our expectations. And despite a more challenging trading environment in some of the markets, our transformation plans continue to make progress. For the full year, we continue to expect the progress of our non-rail businesses to largely offset the reduced size of the UK rail franchise portfolio. Now I'll hand back to Kaz so we can take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, it's star and one if you wish to ask a question. Your first question comes to the line of Anand Date from Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Hi. Morning, everyone. I had two questions, please. The first was just on US school bus. There was an article in The Economist actually a couple of weeks ago just saying that in some states they're being constrained on their school transport budget and therefore they might be looking at actually just cutting completely the service. I was wondering if you could comment on, you know, how strong the legal requirement is for school bus provision and how we can reconcile, you know, potentially constrained school board budgets with the 4-5% price increases of the last 2 years. That's my first question. And then my second question was, I appreciate your kind of investment grade. I was just, for a big franchise such as Southwest Trains, which, you know, will be coming up in the next 2 years, given that it looks as if the amount of risk capital companies are having to put up is increasing, do you think big franchises are a little bit more difficult to bid for, and perhaps you still do need a bit of fresh free cash flow to get the net debt to EBITDA down further before you can bid for those? Thank you.
Morning, Anand. Thanks for your questions. First of all, on school buses, overall, if you look at the overall finances of school boards, they're back to pre-recession levels, and therefore, we don't see overall, and I think this is the same across the whole industry, pressure to cut back. And I think at the end of the day, you see the fact that we've achieved these price increases, and I remind everybody that the price increases that we have seen are average price increases, certainly for those contracts at the bottom end of our return range. The price increases are significantly higher than the average. So that's been achieved. I know that other players in the market have also focused on return, so it's not just us. So I think I will put it in the overall context of the overall market, and therefore those isolated events we're not seeing as a general item. And I think generally school boards have to provide school services is my overall understanding.
Transport's a very small portion of their budget, and you're right, there is, where it varies by state, there is a federal mandate in some sense to provide transport over a certain distance.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so that's the first one. In terms of bidding, yes, there is obviously risk capital that is required for each of the contracts, and naturally you would expect it to be higher on the bigger ones, but each franchise does vary, so it will depend upon the individual requirements. What I would say is that, first of all, it's not all of the bonding that is required when you put up a bid that goes into the rating agency calculations. It's only certain elements of it, is the first thing. The second thing is I will say that if you look at the metrics that we talked about before. So if you take the S&P metrics, that our target last year was to be above 23%, and you saw that we were actually at 25%, that gives us headroom. Also, given the fact that the business transformations are making progress, that will lead to higher cash flow. And therefore, you take all of those into account. I do not see us being restricted on our ability to bid on these franchises.
Okay, that's clear. That's very clear. Thank you.
Thanks, Anand.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Damian Brewer from RBC. Please ask your question.
Yes, good morning. Like Anand, a couple from me, please. First of all, Chris, thanks for the very clear explanation. On the UK bus side, obviously, it feels like things have moved slightly in terms of the price, volume, and mix of business mix. So in terms of the progression from here at sort of H1 through to the what I believe is now a 10% exit margin goal for 16-17, could you just update us on, you know, broadly how much of that comes from changing the mix of business, i.e. depot exits? How much do you expect that to come from price and how much from volume? And then secondly, more of a sort of accounting, but nonetheless, I think, sort of interesting issue. It feels like where your mix of profitability is changing, there's a little bit more UK focus on the rail side and a little bit less North American profits from Greyhound. Does that mean that we should still expect to see the effective tax rate of the business accelerate very significantly, or will that now dampen down as more of your business moves into an 18% UK tax environment? Thank you.
Thanks, Damien. So on UK bus, as I indicated earlier, we'd expect to see a 1% increase in margin if you exclude the one-off costs year on year, which takes us to broadly around 7% margin for the year. Then as we go forwards, there's essentially three elements as we move towards the 10% exit rate out to 16-17. There's, first of all, achieving yield. And we talked about this last year, that once we reach the anniversary dates of some of the actions that we'd taken in the previous year, would we be able to achieve yield in line with some of our other competitors? And the answer to that, that we saw effectively in the first quarter of this calendar year and has continued, is yes, so we're seeing that yield. The second element is volumes, and we are still seeing positive volume growth, which is good, and slightly ahead, I think, of some of our competitors, so there is a continuation of that. But also a major part is, and the third element, is the cost efficiency programs. And we're making good progress on that. As you know, we delivered good cost efficiencies last year, and that will continue this year. And I think the difference between us and others is that we were actually starting from a lower base, and therefore we had a lot more to go at in terms of getting cost efficiencies, best practice into the business. Obviously, having a younger fleet now reduces maintenance costs and so on. So that those are the three elements. What you referred to in terms of the depot changes and that I covered in the speech, those improve, also add, but they are not the major elements. On those depots, we made the decisions that we did because we couldn't see that with all the levers that we could pull that those depots would get to the returns that we would require. So they move our achievement of getting to the 10% slightly, but I wouldn't want to overemphasize those in relative to the other aspects that I've talked about. On the tax effect, although yes, rail is going great guns, if I can put it that way, on the back of strong passenger revenue growth, it's in the context that the student numbers are held back this year because of the 17 million, and I would expect that to rebalance effectively next year, and as we continue to make progress as well on student. And at some point, I'm sure oil prices will come back. It's everybody's estimate of when that will be. So I still expect tax rate to increase over time from the current rates of 26% into the 30s. It may well be around the edges, whether it's 30 or 34 or 33, just on the absolute mix. But no, I still expect the tax rate to increase.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Damien.
Thank you. Your next question comes to the line of James Hollins from Nomura. Please ask your question.
Hi, morning. Three from me, please. First one is just on Manchester trading. I was wondering if you could let us know sort of how that's going, whether you're still fighting tooth and nail with Stagecoach or whether that's starting to abate. The second one is how you go about sort of remedying the driver shortages in the US student market. Is that a long-term problem? Is it something you're having to work very hard to fix, or is it relatively minor in the whole scheme of things? And then, I don't know if I've missed this, but are you all now done on the depot changes? Because obviously a £7 million non-exceptional charge, if there's more to come, obviously we need to know about it. Thank you.
Morning, James. Thanks very much. On Manchester, we effectively cover half of the city. Stagecoach cover the other half of the city. There are some routes that run in between the two regions. And the competition is, I would say, just good, healthy competition, and I would see it continuing. No real change there. In terms of driver shortages, it's an issue. It's acute, if I can use that phrase, in a relatively small number of areas. How we're dealing with it is that we have new systems in place. We've actually got new computer systems as well in terms of software tracking, how we go through the search processes. Obviously, retention is also a key element of that, and that is helping us. I think the reality, the way we think about this, is given the generally improving U.S. economy and given the fact that driver shortages are fairly wide, not only in our business, but also any commercial truck drivers have businesses have shortages, that it's something that will be we will focus on, I think, for quite some time. In terms of the numbers, it's just providing a headwind to our cost-saving program. But as I say, overall, we should get to our margins of plus 8% this year. So it's one that's on the radar, and we will keep focused on it. In terms of the depot changes, I mean, businesses never stand still. You're always looking for how you improve it. But certainly in the shorter term, we're essentially done on those depot changes.
Very clear. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Edward Stanford from Lazarus. Please ask your question.
Good morning, everybody. Just a couple of questions for me as well, please, if I may. First of all, slightly specific questions. Are you experiencing any concerning wage inflation in the UK bus business? Second, can you give perhaps a flavour of whether the trends in the seen in the first half of, in Greyhound have continued or have they deteriorated any further? And finally, to ask a question that I suspect you probably aren't able to answer in any great certainty, just with the buses bill going through the process of being constructed and movements on bus franchising, could you give me your impression of how you understand that process is panning out for First Group? Thank you.
Morning, Edward. Thank you. Wage inflation in bus, I think you asked.
Yeah.
In bus, again, relatively low. I was overall in the region of around 1%, slightly higher at the lower levels of pay category. Slightly higher at the lower levels of pay category and slightly lower at the higher levels of pay category. So we don't see a major issue there. I didn't quite understand your question on Greyhound, given that we're on the continuation from the first half, given that we're only on the 2nd of October. So I'm not sure I understood your question.
No, it was really just trying to work out whether there had actually been a deterioration in the second quarter or not, whether I was reading that right.
I
asked the question wrongly.
Yeah. Yes, there has been a deterioration because the first quarter was 5.7% down, I think, on revenue, and for the half it's 6.2%. So yes, it did get slightly worse in the second quarter, and that was due to the continuing fall in the oil price during that period. What I would say going forwards is that once we get to the fourth quarter, we then are overlapping the major shortfall in oil prices last October, November. In terms of the buses, Bill, clearly that is going through the process. I mean, there's different forms it will take. Our understanding is that will come before the various authorities in the first half of 2016. In terms of how we look at it, the key thing is that the right economic decisions are made as well as the right political ones. And if we look at our view, the private sector has provided very, very good growth for that business, but also capital input into that business. And therefore, we would see maintaining the current structure as one that has benefited the industry. And certainly when you look at how we've worked with authorities, Sheffield, for example, Bristol, York, and you see the sorts of growth that we've achieved, passenger volume growth, in those areas with working in partnership with the authorities, then that's the way that we would encourage people to think. But clearly, we have to wait to see how the bus bill develops and what comes from that over the coming year or so.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Joe Thomas from HSBC. Please ask your question.
Morning. Just following on from, well, a few questions from me, but just following on from Edward's last question about Greyhound, can you just give the seasonal weighting of Greyhound in revenue terms so we can get a better sense of just how marked the deterioration has been in Q2? And also on Greyhound, we all know about the oil price, but is there any sense that competition from other coach operators is intensifying, not least the Chinatown operators that have been quite aggressive in the past? On rail, could you perhaps give any sort of signals about where the upgrades are coming from, i.e. which franchises are outperforming your expectations? And then finally, US school bus, what's the rate of underlying cost inflation if you strip out fuel, please?
Sorry, Joe, I'm just writing those down. I think I've got four questions there. In terms of a split on half on half for Greyhound, it's broadly 50-50, probably slightly less in the second half than it is in the first half, and that's because you get more people actually taking long-distance travel in the summer holidays.
I was thinking about quarterly.
Just bear with me, Joe. We're just looking at that. Sure. Okay, just while we're looking that up, well, we'll either come back to you separately. Or
thanks, okay.
If we can find it, we'll come back to you. Let me have a go on your other questions. So on Greyhound, yes, the Chinese players, I would say, have been about same as previous periods, so no more or no less intensive. I think, though, and also they're extremely tiny when you look at the overall network of Greyhound, and you've heard me say this many times, we're the only nationwide network, full network player. The only other comment I would make is if you look at Stagecoach's statement on Megabus, and they implied that they were certainly not expanding any of their services, but I think that's a question for them, really. But we are not seeing any intensification of competition. In terms of the franchises, clearly in our portfolio at the moment, you have First Great Western, very large. You have TPE, a reasonable size, but nothing in the context of Great Grace Western. And then you have Hull Trains, which is relatively small. All of them are performing well, but it's really First Great Western where we've seen the significant passenger volume growth that is driving effectively the financial performance at the very top end of our expectations. And in school bus, overall inflation is running just below 2%.
Are you expecting that to step up as a result of these driver shortages?
No, in the sense of the driver shortages, as I mentioned, I think in response to one of the questions earlier, is we're taking actions to keep that under control, and therefore I would expect that to stabilise going forwards.
Okay, thanks.
Not increase. Nick?
The Greyhound revenue, I mean, I've got the US split on me. It's, Chris says it's relatively flat, but it does peak over the summer. So, now, quarter one's roughly 25%, quarter two is roughly 27%, and then 24-23%. So it is skewed towards the summer.
Right, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks, Joe.
Thank you. Your next question comes to the line of Julian Wellington from JPM. Please ask your question.
Good morning. I'd like to ask two questions, please. One is just on cash and specifically free cash flow. I'm aware that the FY16 numbers are slightly impacted by the loss of ScotRail, but I just wondered what your thoughts are going into FY17. What are you going to see in terms of CapEx? Are there any other moving parts? And I guess, how do you feel about free cash flow generation in FY17? And maybe even if you could comment on FY16 on a sort of X loss of rail franchise basis. And then second question is just on UK rail. Clearly the 7% is a good like for like number. I just wondered if you could comment on where there's been some strikes on that line, and I wondered if you could comment sort of Xing out those, what the sort of underlying run rate would be, and also how that compares to your bid and your recent direct award. Are you it getting close in any way to seeing your profit levels capped on that? Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Just scrolling here. Thanks, Julian. So in terms of cash, when I was talking generally, I said underlying would be flat this year, because I think that was the second part of your question. And then you've got a 30 million outflow of from the end of ScotRail, or the bit that impacts this year. The total outflow is around 75 million, but we took 45 million of that last year. So that would be the underlying. I would go back to what I said probably a couple of years ago, which is over the 3 years ending this year, that I'd expect cash underlying cash flow to be essentially flat, and in the last 2 years we've exceeded that. I think 30-odd million 2 years ago, 40 million last year, and then this I'd see about flat to slightly positive. Then if you look forwards into next year, I'd expect CapEx levels to run at about the same level as this year, so around the 400 million mark. But the key is, as we get to achieving our margin targets, or in other words, improvements in EBITDA that we've outlined, that's where you get the increased cash flow from. And I think if you go back to the year-end presentation, if my memory serves me correct, it was page 13 of the slide pack. What we did there was we set out the different moving parts on what happens on pensions, what happens on some of the working capital unwinds, that would allow you to build your models as to what you see it going forwards. And there's no change to any of that guidance that we gave at that time. So in other words, I would see free cash flow improving significantly next year. In terms of UK rail, the 7% is an underlying rate, and that excludes the impact of the strikes, but I have to say that impact was relatively small, because we did get a good number of the services actually running during the strike period. Okay,
and just in terms of how that compares to your bid, the recent direct awards, and I guess any comments about whether you're getting close to having your profit levels capped, or whether there's plenty more upside if the like-for-likes continue at 7% or higher?
So at the moment, it's Obviously, when you put a bid in, there's a range, and as you quite rightly say, there are towards the top of that range you get into profit share, and above a certain point, then 100% goes off to the government. I would expect us if these levels continue to be in the profit share range, but not at the top.
Okay, so in other words, you'll get diminishing improvements on profitability for
correct.
Incremental improvements on the run rate.
Yes, correct.
Okay, but still positive. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, that's the right way to think about it, yeah. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes to the line of Joe Spooner from Jefferies. Please ask your question.
Morning, guys. It sounds like the yield management system is largely in place and ready to go in Greyhound, but from your commentary, it sounds like you're quite cautious in terms of the timing of the benefits to come through from that. Can you just talk a little bit about why you are so cautious on those timings?
Essentially, it is in place of the models, the computer systems, and actually more importantly than that, the people to work them, work all the algorithms and so on, are in place. We're just going through the final processes of that before we actually launch it, and as I said, exactly on time. The issue is in terms of it will build, well, not the issue, the reason it will build over time is this is actually a very, very complex network, and to remind you, there's just below 4,000 nodes. There's something like 48,000 different route mappings, and it's putting all of that into the system, and then what happens is that you start making changes to improve the yields on individual routes. And obviously, when you're doing things like that, you put some in, you change it, you see what happens, you put a particular fare structure in, you see how it improves the demand management, and then you roll that out. But obviously, each route is different. And that's why it will build over time as we go through that process. And obviously, hopefully you see this as the first of new, is that we tend to be, if we can, more cautious on that until we've actually delivered it.
Is there any sense of when that system will be kind of fully up and running? Is it kind of a three-year project, or as you kind of phase through the various routes and combinations there?
Well, the system will be in the autumn, as we promised. It will then build. I think the reality is that because you've got a continually evolving public who want to travel some ways, some way on one day and some ways another, it will always be improving as you learn. But I think it will be over the next 18 months that we will make most of the progress. 18 months to 24, I think.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone. And it's hash key if you wish to withdraw your question. Your next question comes from the line of Anand Date from Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi, morning, everyone. Sorry, I just had a follow-up. And it's more of an industry question, really. If I look at bus and rail, so I'm talking about UK bus, basically, a lot of other labour-intensive industries have come out with comments around some of their long-term planning about the national living wage and that kind of thing. I appreciate you pay above the national living wage, I think. I appreciate your current levels of cost inflation are relatively low, at kind of 1%, 2% seems to be what the industry is saying. Can you maybe just give us an idea of the kind of planning exercises you're going through, what the risks might be on the supplier side of your cost base as well as your own cost base and that kind of thing?
Yes, thanks, Anand. We have done exercises to go through exactly what you're suggesting, and you're absolutely right that the vast, vast majority of our people are paid above the living wage. It was something like 0.2% of people potentially below it, so relatively small. But you're also quite right that there could be some impacts from subcontractors not paying the living wage and how that flows through. But our assessments of that is the impact of it is likely to be very, very small. And therefore, we do not see the living wage legislation given what we pay at the moment and what we've built into our future modelling to be a major issue for us or an issue for us.
Very clear. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Damian Brewer from RBC. Please ask your question.
Yes. Good morning again. One follow-up, please. Can I come back to Greyhound, please? And in particular, the mix in the business. I remember in the full year last year to March, Canada was about 21% of the business, but you lost money in Canada. So it kind of felt like the underlying US business was almost close to 10% margins. So really two questions from that. Of the deterioration in Greyhound year to date, how much of that is, if you like, the structural Canadian issue rather than the fuel and demand issue? And if it is the case that it's Canada that continues to be loss-making, do you still think there's a path to evolve out of those losses, or might you have to look again at shrinking the Canadian business to get to the 12% margin goal? Anything you can share on that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Damien. Yes, you're absolutely right. The Canadian business is now just short of about 20% of the total business we'd expect it to be this year. It was loss-making last year by around $7 million. That number we expect, assuming, obviously still a lot of the year to go, but assuming that oil prices stay where they are, I would expect that number to be a larger loss this year. And that's despite us now taking action. As you know, that was very much a regulated business. And we've been taking action, as that has been changing, to reduce mileage, take out costs, and so on. But because of the oil price impact, and it does tend to impact Canada more harshly because distances are somewhat longer up there, that means the alternatives are more valuable to our customers. That's probably the wrong word, but you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at is, as always, is how we get that business back to at least break even. And we're looking at all of the different potential options we can do on that. But that is a key element. But actually, it emphasizes the point that you've just made, that the base U.S. business is actually making good high single digit at the moment, even despite these low oil prices margins.
But the U.S. will be lower.
The U.S. will be lower because of the oil. But once oil comes back, once we sort out the Canadian business and get that back to break even, then that's how we achieve the 12%.
Okay, thank you. And are there any constraints or sort of exit costs that you would face if you had to do anything in Canada, or is something things like pensions, et cetera, or, you know, because there must be a point where your shareholders, et cetera, just can't keep on forwarding to subsidize one loss-making part of a business.
Well, 2 points, yes. One, we are clearly at the objective and we're working very hard on not having a loss-making business. There are certainly costs that will be associated with making any decisions on that, and I don't think it's appropriate for me to go into too much detail here. But the other thing I would say is there is also a good cross-border business between Canada and the U.S., which is profitable. And again, in any actions that we take, any measures to change the routes, et cetera, we have to take that into account. But just be assured, and any shareholders listening to this, be assured that we are very, very focused on that area.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris. And thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes to the line of Alex Patterson from Investec. Please ask your question.
Morning, everyone. Can I ask three questions, please, just really for clarification on the living wage, where you say you have 0.2% below the living wage, I assume you mean the £7.20 that it will be in sort of April next year rather than, say, you know, the 9 and change or whatever it will be in 2020. Would you be able to say what sort of percentage of staff you've got below, say, £9 an hour at the moment? Secondly, just on the UK bus, you have reorganized your bus structure, you've cut a number of depots. Would you be able to say how many depots you've got rid of? And secondly, I'm assuming that you've stopped provision of service or of those services that you ran from those depots. Are there any that you still operate but from a different depot? And then finally, just on the UK bus concessionary fares, you know, clearly the government is trying to squeeze expenditure as hard as they can. Can anything be done on the revenue front there, perhaps on an industry-wide basis, to sort of recover some of those fares as to where they were before?
On the living wage, I was referring to the £7.20, and the simple answer is no. Here, I don't have the details on the £9, so we'd have to pick that up separately, Alex. In terms of the UK bus, it was the depots that I outlined in the script. So it was the three depots, and again, each one varies in that. On the one depot in South Devon, we sold to a competitor. Other depots we have merged. In some cases, some of the routes have been changed. In other cases, we are running the routes from different depots. And in the case of the merger in the Potteries, we're still running some of the routes out of the now combined depot. In terms of concessionary fares, clearly, it's an industry-wide issue, as I commented earlier. Then the issue is just the sheer numbers going down. I think it would be. I'm trying to get to how I respond to your question, because I think just because volumes are going down, to say to the government, right, we'll pay us more for each passenger, I'm not sure that works. But I think the issue is, the way we're addressing it, as I said when I spoke, is it's a fact. It's a fact that's affecting the whole industry, and therefore we have to work harder on the levers that we're pulling on the cost efficiency side, and we see plenty of opportunity to do that.
Great. Thank you very much.
The overall transformation, all of the different elements I mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Once again, it's star and one if anybody else would like to ask a question. Your next question comes from the line of Gerald Koo from Liberum. Please ask your question.
Morning, all. Just two questions for me. Firstly, on the depot closures, could you just give us an indication of what percentage of UK bus revenue that relates to on, say, an annualised basis? And secondly, just thinking ahead on TransPennine, if you were not to retain that franchise, what's the potential working capital outflow there, please?
Okay, Gerald, good morning. On the depots, it's very, very small, so single-digit revenues in the first half. And on TPE, the outflow would be of the order of 30 to 40 million, should we not win it. But hopefully we will.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. Cheers, Daryl.
So as a reminder, it's still...
Okay, I think, Taz, I know you're having to try hard enough to get questions, but I think, unless if there's any other questions, we will call this to a close.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, thank you, everybody, and I look forward to seeing you all at our half-year announcement on the 12th of November. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now all disconnect.